Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. At the outset of the COVID-19 pandemic in North America, it looked like Canada's beef cattle producers were well positioned to benefit from a glaring uptick in consumer demand, as evidenced by the photos we all saw of nearly empty meat cases at retail. But what we're now seeing at cattle auctions and Canada's major packing plants shows maybe even a double hourglass shape in the pipeline between cattle supply and consumer demand. And within those pinch points, of course, we're seeing a whole other story of the human toll that this pandemic is taking. On the line, we have Lisa Gunther, the editor of Canadian Cattleman, the beef magazine. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Dave.
And we have Alexis Keeneland, a reporter with Alberta Farmer Express. Hey, Alexis.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. And we'll let's start at the packing plants and work our way back. The numbers of COVID-19 cases that we've seen so far in Alberta show a couple of clusters in and around a couple of major centers for beef cattle slaughter and processing. What are we seeing out there right now?
Well, it's hard to say the exact numbers because it changes day by day. But I think both the Cargill plant, which is in High River, and the JBS plant, which is in Brooks, are considered outbreak situations where they've got, as far as I know, and again, I don't want to give the wrong numbers, but there are hundreds of cases in both facilities. Mm-hmm. The Cargill plant is closed. It closed on April 20th and is no longer functioning. There's generally about 2,000 people working at the Cargill plant. The Brooks plant, JBS, is still operating, but just with just one line. Both plants have some what's called community spread, where they have people from outside the plant had contact with people who worked in the plant, or vice versa. And so there is spread beyond plant workers into the communities of both Brooks and High River.
Mm-hmm. And I was just watching a corporate video from one of those plants the other day. You know, this was done, of course, a long time before the pandemic, but it shows, you know, workers on the cutting floor having very, very little space between them when they're working. And there's reports that suggest that it's not that much different after they leave the plant for the day. I'm thinking in terms of not only working conditions, but in terms of the housing in which these folks are living.
Yeah. So, Dave, I talked to community leaders in both Brooks and High River area. And actually, in some ways, their living situations are not necessarily that different from a lot of Canadians. Like, you might have a few single people sharing an apartment. You have people renting like a basement suite from a family. But they also sometimes have extended families occupying the same house, or maybe different families sharing a household. So that's been a big challenge, because if you have to self-isolate within a household like that? So they're actually now looking for hotel rooms for people that need to self-isolate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, so we have these two major plants that are either in shutdown or slowdown mode. And one of our market experts, Jerry Clausen, he said in his online column today, Tuesday as I speak, on our websites that packers aren't really showing their bids right now, and major feedlots haven't been particularly active at markets. You know, where does this leave our cattle feeders?
Feeders are just kind of holding on and kind of waiting to see what's going to happen, from what I say. But at the same time, they are losing money. I've heard records. It's about a feeder cattle right now is a loss of between $600 to $700.
Ouch.
They're not doing any action. They're just shifting to a maintenance ration, and, you know, right now just kind of hoping that this isn't going to go on for too long, because it's a really precarious situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're hearing we're hearing reports from the hog sector, certainly, that are a little more that are a lot more sort of unfortunate about hogs being euthanized, about pregnant sows, about abortions for pregnant sows and whatnot. With cattle, obviously, you can put them on a maintenance ration and hang on to them, but that comes at a cost as well.
Yeah, it does, because basically it means you're having to spend more on feed than you would normally for those animals. And I mean, each steer or heifer, like, it has really several years of investment in it throughout the whole supply chain. So that's kind of a bit of a difference between the beef and the pork sectors.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, further down east as well, I mean, we're seeing a situation in Ontario where cattle producers down there were calling for assistance even before the pandemic got underway. They had lost the Riding Regency plant down there, and the Carhill plant at Guelph still seems to be operating. But that was where we were seeing the early calls for a set aside program, and now, of course, a larger call throughout the industry Canada wide for such a program. It's similar to what we saw, of course, during the BSE crisis. And now for the non-ranching layperson, I'm trying to get an idea of how a set aside program would work.
Basically, the set aside program is kind of, you appoint some experts from industry and government, and then you kind of funnel certain, this is just my basic understanding of it, you sort of funnel the cattle into certain groups and sort of pick the number of cattle that are going to go through the system. It could be quarterly, monthly, weekly, and you're really maintaining them on rations so they're not gaining as quickly. That's sort of how it was explained to me. I guess it's just one way of slowing the system down. And that's been, like, one of the other challenges with the whole thing, is that just under COVID-19, with the added things that everyone has to do, you know, physical distancing, social distancing, spacing people apart, the added challenges is it's the lines have been basically slowed even before we had the outbreaks. Mm-hmm. Everything has just been operating on a slower basis.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the big difference in this case too is that, you know, during BSE we had packers, but they were, you know, cut off from export markets, and that limited their need for cattle all the way down the road. In this case, however, you've got market demand for beef out there, but you've got a pandemic that's affecting packer employees, and, you know, either way, the end result is the same. You know, has anyone heard whether there's the political will to make a new set aside program happen?
So the last town hall I had tuned into, they were speaking with government officials, and it seemed like they were somewhat optimistic that there would be progress, but there hasn't been any announcement yet that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I haven't heard any announcement either. I know that they started talking about it way before the plants went down, like a few days before the Cargill shut, they were talking about it. I think Fawn Jackson, who's senior, I can't remember her position, but I think it's something that it has to do with government relations with the Canadian cattlemen. She said that they were talking about it before, but this situation has hopefully moved the livestock industry up into more of a crisis situation, and that there's specific need for this now. Dennis Laycraft, the executive vice president of the Canadian Cattlemen's Association, also said that if the government, the industry is also trying to advocate hard for the government support now, because the cattle industry could also be an economic driver once things are opened up or things are returned to the quote unquote normal, where the economy is really damaged. Agriculture does have the ability to maybe be an economic driver for Canada, and we will be supplying food to Canadians, but we will be also providing food to the larger population, those people outside Canada who might be experiencing increasing food insecurity right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Dennis made a really good point in one of those meetings too, which was if the government came through with support now, it would actually help offset or protect against bigger market losses. So there would be less need for government support later on if there was earlier action. So I think that's important as well.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully we'll see an announcement coming out of Ottawa soon either way. Lisa Gunther, Alexis Keeneland, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lisa Gunther is the editor of Canadian Cattleman, the Beef Magazine, and working on a new novel. And Alexis Keeneland is a reporter for Alberta Farmer Express, and her new novel, Mad Cow, is available online through Fine Canadian Booksellers. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. We're hearing estimates from humanitarian organizations overseas that the number of people up against food shortages and hunger could double due to pandemic-related lockdowns and other logistical challenges related to COVID-19. The Canadian Food Grains Bank, operated by Canadian churches and church agencies, is looking to fund new programs to meet that additional need on top of the added food insecurity in areas where it's already working. On the line, we have Jim Cornelius, the executive director of the Canadian Food Grains Bank. Mr. Cornelius, hello and welcome to Between the Rows.
Thank you for calling.
Now, I've been following the interactive map of how COVID-19 has affected countries worldwide, and it doesn't seem to have had yet anywhere near the same impact in developing countries as it has here in North America and in Western Europe. Is there a sense of whether the virus has already hit those places and it's just not being confirmed through testing, or is it just a matter of time?
That's a question that we're all asking and don't have an answer for. We don't know whether there's widespread of the virus, but it's not causing the same health effects, because in many of these countries, you have a very different demographic than you have in Canada, with populations being much younger, don't have concentrations of the elderly in seniors' homes. So it might end up sort of having quite a different impact on the health status. But what we are seeing is, with governments trying quickly to make sure it doesn't spread rapidly, is they're then having these shutdowns, and that's having a very dramatic effect on households across those countries.
Mm-hmm. Now, we often hear that that modern hunger isn't so much a matter of a lack of food supplies so much as a matter of the logistics in getting food to where it's needed. COVID-19 seems to have exacerbated that problem. What can you tell us about the specific problems in getting food from point A to point B in countries where the Food Grains Bank operates?
Yeah, I would say that the food supply chains are not badly disrupted at this point. The biggest impact is on people losing their jobs, losing their livelihoods. Many people in these countries live day to day through in the informal economy, petty traders, day laborers. And for a lot of those people, they have lost jobs literally overnight, and they do not have bank accounts or savings or credit lines. So while there may be food in the markets, they simply don't have the cash to be able to buy it. So it's what's needed quickly is for either cash or food to get to those households. Just as, you know, direct assistance, not unlike what's happening in Canada with the CERB, where, you know, with people have lost jobs overnight, government is trying quickly to get cash into people's hands so they can pay their rent and buy groceries. So I would say that's the biggest crisis we're seeing right now. There are some disruptions to food supplies, but they're not major yet, although we are monitoring that closely. And I know some governments initially put some pretty tough restrictions in place and then saw that it was creating problems, and so I've lifted some of those restrictions to try and ensure that traders can move food and that farmers can get food to markets as best possible.
And what can you tell us about the Food Grains Bank's role in addressing these issues?
Our first priority right away was to ensure that our feeding programs and food assistance programs were able to continue, because the people that we were providing food to were already in an emergency situation. So we had to work quickly with our partners and member churches to try and ensure those programs were not unduly disrupted. And unfortunately, most of our partners on the ground have been able to quickly adapt their programs. We've been able to continue to get food into the communities that are needing it. So we're really happy that we've been able to keep these programs going, and we're continuing to work with partners to make sure that that happens in the longer term. And so now we're now starting to work with partners to say, how do we respond to the increasing needs in many of the communities in which they're working? Because needs are growing now as livelihoods are being lost, jobs are being lost. And so that's the second phase for us. And also we're working with partners to think about how do we make sure we protect particularly farming livelihoods to ensure that they, if there are problems getting access to inputs during planting season or constraints on the marketing side, can we find ways to help those so that we don't have further problems down the road in these farming communities.
Mm-hmm. Now you're looking to get new programs set up overseas as well. Are there areas where the Food Grains Bank isn't yet operating that it's now looking to do so, and why those areas specifically?
I don't think we're really going to move into new areas. It's very difficult to set up completely new programs with new partners and new areas. We are very much focused on those parts of the world where we're already present, where we already have partnerships, and that they're able to begin to scale up their operations in to deal with the rising needs. We're already working in some of the most vulnerable communities around the world, and so we want to stay focused on those areas and those communities because the needs are increasing there and we have the capacity to respond there.
Now, we hear more these days also about how developing countries don't necessarily need actual, you know, tangible food aid in the form of food from Canada and other developed countries. But from the perspective of Canadian grain growers and from other farmers here in Canada who are just about to start putting crops in the ground or who are already trying to harvest what's left of last fall's crops, what can they do to help in the Food Grains Bank's activities at this point in the year?
Yeah, we're very hopeful that many of the farm groups that continue to plant a crop for us will continue to do so. The growing projects will continue. So that's our first priority. And we're encouraged that so many of the projects seem to be operating and planning to go ahead and plant a crop for us this year, because the needs are going to continue well into next year in many of the areas in which we're working. So that's one of the things that we're hopeful for. We're also knowing that many people are being affected by this crisis in Canada that have been supporting us won't be able to donate. So those that are able to, that are still able to have a livelihood they need and funding, we're hopeful that they will be able to continue with their support for us and possibly even increase it this year to make up for those that just aren't able to.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll certainly keep an eye on that and on developments overseas in the future. Jim Cornelius, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
Jim Cornelius is the Executive Director of the Canadian Food Grains Bank. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard. You don't have to watch TV or scroll through social media for very long before you run across very effusive expressions of thanks for our essential services, including but not limited to those who produce... those who produce, process, and deliver the food we all eat. But as grateful as everyone on Earth seems to be, commodity markets have got kind of a funny way of expressing that. Bruce Burnett is Director of Weather and Markets Information for Glacier Markets Farm, and he's on the line now. Bruce, hi, and welcome back to Between the Rows.
Good to be here.
So there doesn't seem to be a lack of demand for food, certainly. Let's talk about what else out there is causing ag commodities to send the signals we're seeing now.
Well, we're certainly seeing some hesitation in terms of the markets to move in either direction, at least conclusively here, as we go through this COVID crisis. Certainly, the demand for commodities has been strong. On the meat side, we've seen some issues with certainly with processing capability, but for the grains and oilseeds, it's been pretty seamless in terms of the logistics. So really the commodities have started to trade a little bit on the fundamentals. The one area is the feed grain markets that are taking some issues right now, especially the corn market, mostly because of the reliance of corn on the ethanol processing industry.
And crude oil, of course, that's weighing heavily on the ethanol sector right now, isn't it?
You know, basically the same things that are impacting crude oil are impacting ethanol. When we stop driving, we stop consuming the product that is ethanol or crude oil, and so it starts to back up. In terms of oil wells, they're harder to shut down, so you're seeing storage issues in the oil industry, whereas in the ethanol industry, basically plants are shutting down and ethanol is no longer being produced, although we certainly have built fairly large stocks of ethanol in the U.S. so far this month.
Now, as far as the getting back to the COVID-19 pandemic for a second, obviously that's having an effect on crude. Is there any other direct impact that that the pandemic is having on grains so far as we know?
Really, other than this fact that we're seeing changes in the supply chains, the grain and oilseed sector really moved through this fairly seamlessly. Of course, there's concern in the vegetable oil side about the lack of restaurant business or the decline in restaurant use for the oil, but certainly that hasn't had a profound impact on prices to date. We've basically seen canola, wheat trade mostly sideways here through this pandemic. So as we've stocked up our larders with oil and flour, we've helped offset maybe some of the negative issues associated with COVID. And so those markets have moved along fairly well. It'll be interesting to see as we move through planting and into the growing season here, how markets hold up as they are starting to take a very close look at the weather and other issues happening around the globe.
And what do we know so far about farmers' planting intentions, both here and to the south?
Well, in terms of the U.S. Planting intentions, we're seeing essentially a larger corn and soybean area because of last year's planting difficulties, but USDA indicated a larger corn area was coming our way. Prices for corn, however, have dropped dramatically because of that ethanol situation. So you're now seeing farmers switch their intentions maybe to soybeans. We won't get an accurate portrayal of that until the end of June, but certainly it's interesting to see how that is going to transpire over this spring. As far as wheat goes, south of the border, we're going to see smaller durum as well as spring wheat area. At least that's the expectation from USDA, and planting has gotten off to a slow start. In Canada, I think we're going to see increased durum and pulse acres. Those are the two crops right now that are enjoying very, very strong prices relative to others. So as we move into the planting season here, I think we're going to see those numbers come gel a little bit more, at least anyway. We'll get a Statistics Canada report on May the 7th, indicating what the planted area intentions are of farmers on the prairies. Although, again, I think like the U.S., we're going to maybe see some last-minute switching here with additional pea and lentil acres going in at the tail end.
And what are the weather maps showing us so far? I mean, I'm seeing a lot of photos out there of farmers who are very happy to be out on the fields. You know, some of them doing field prep work, and of course others out there with their combines scraping up what was left over from last year.
Yeah, this spring actually has been not too bad so far. We certainly were cool through the first half of April and only saw a warm up here in the last week, but. We've remained fairly dry throughout the prairies over this April, with the exception maybe of some of the northern growing areas where we did see some additional snow at the beginning of the month and in late March as well. So that's allowing us to get out into the fields in a sort of a reasonably timely fashion. I would say we're probably right on schedule right now for planting this year's crop. Most of the planting so far has been done in the southern prairies, south of Highway 1, as well as into parts of the central growing areas. We'll see the northern region start up maybe later this week and into early next week, as those areas still have a fair amount of crop to harvest from last year as well.
So I guess we'll keep watching the skies and hope for continued optimal weather. Bruce Burnett, many thanks for your insight as always.
Thank you.
Bruce Burnett is Director of Weather and Markets Information with Glacier Markets Farm. That's our time for this week, but we'll be back next month, which is to say next week, with more from the Glacier Farm Media family of publications. Thanks for listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Dave Bedard.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.